Disclosure Initiative. New cameraman. It's a tiring job. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So good afternoon, everyone. This final session of the day is to talk about the principles of disclosure discussion paper. So the comment letter period for this closed in October, and we're currently working through our formal comment letter analysis process. Agenda paper 11, which is the cover paper for this session, summarises our plan timeline for the next few months in terms of bringing all of the feedback back to the board. We received a high volume of detailed feedback, and for that reason, we think there's benefit in bringing you a high-level summary now in advance of the full detailed feedback that you'll be seeing in the new year. So the purpose of today's education session is really to inform the board about the key high-level messages coming out of the letters and to give you an opportunity to ask any questions and share your thoughts on those. We hope that will then provide a useful preemptive summary for what we anticipate being a very detailed comment letter summary coming in February 2018. Also in February, we plan to bring a summary of all of our outreach activities, along with a summary of the feedback we've heard from investors, which primarily came through the outreach programme rather than through the comment letters. We'll then be aiming to bring staff recommendations on project next steps to the board in March of 2018. So I'm just going to pause there briefly before moving on to the feedback summary to see if anyone has any comments on that proposed timeline. Okay, moving straight on then to agenda paper 11A. So this slide pack gives a high-level summary of the feedback we've received. The first thing I'd like to do is highlight the red disclaimer on slide 2. We are still working through our full comment letter database analysis, so it's important to note that everything in this slide pack should be taken as indicative only rather than a complete summary of everything we've heard. I'll first mention the overview information on slides 3 and 4, and then I'll summarise how we'd like to organise today's discussion.
Catherine, can I ask you something? You know how there's a part in here that's directly relevant to the primary financial statements project?
Yes.
Are you going to put that piece together earlier than the whole piece of the feedback? I'm just thinking of the timing of the two projects.
Yes. So with regard to the question that was specific to PFS, in one of the papers that was in the previous session, there was an appendix with an equivalent high-level summary to the one you're getting for everything else here. Then in February, when we bring the full comment letter summary back, we'll be doing that chapter by chapter, and the chapter that relates to PFS we'll do together with the primary financial statements team, so you'll get the complete feedback summary, but then that element that relates to primary financial statements will feed into that project rather than this one. So slide 3 then shows a breakdown of comment letters by type of stakeholder, and slide 4 gives a high-level overview of the feedback. Now, whilst we did get a lot of varied comments, there was a clear message coming from all stakeholder groups that there is a disclosure problem today. However, there were mixed views coming through on what the main reasons for that problem are. So to give a couple of examples, preparers tend to take the view that the main problem is disclosure overload, so too many prescriptive requirements that, along with the approach of auditors and regulators, they feel effectively enforces a checklist approach. Regulators, on the other hand, tend to think the main issue is preparer behaviour, and in particular, they think that judgments around the application of materiality are not being properly applied. I'll also mention investors who, as a group, tend to be most concerned about a lack of relevant information, i.e. they're more worried about what's not there rather than with getting too much. Those mixed views being what they are, however, what was consistent across just about all of the letters is that respondents do think there is something that the board can do to help with the disclosure problem, which of course brings us to the detailed feedback itself. So I'd categorise that feedback into two distinct buckets. First, we got a lot of comments about the overall approach to the project, i.e. did the discussion paper look at the right things at all, and did it look at those things in the right level of depth? We then got more detailed comments on the preliminary views that were expressed in the paper. So what we propose doing in this session is first summarising the high-level feedback on overall approach, that's in slides 6 to 11, and then stopping there for discussion before moving on to the chapter-by-chapter section. So slides 6 to 11 then summarise five messages about overall approach that were common themes coming through all of the letters that we looked at. So the first message on slide 6 talks about general direction and focus, which some respondents felt was not entirely clear. They thought the discussion paper focused on too many areas in too little depth. And they also commented that they found it difficult to understand what the practical consequences of a number of the topics discussed in the paper would be. So there were a few specific examples of that coming through the different chapters, but the overall message we got was that respondents thought the board should identify the areas they feel would make the most practical difference to the disclosure problem and focus more specifically on those things. Second, on slide 7, we had a number of comments about the interaction of the various Better Communications projects. So some thought that certain elements of the discussion paper would be better within the Primary Financial Statements project. Some think that disclosure cannot be considered separately from materiality because materiality is so intrinsically linked to the disclosure problem. And then some commented on the interaction between the discussions in the DP and the conceptual framework project, which leads me nicely onto the issue raised in slide 8, where some respondents raised questions about which party the discussions in the paper were targeted at, i.e. whether various elements of the discussion paper were intended to result in guidance for the board in developing disclosure requirements, or whether they were intended to result in requirements for companies to apply in preparing disclosures. And the general message there was that respondents wanted the board to be clear about what the end outcomes are that we're aiming for. Slide 9 then highlights technology and digital reporting, which is a topic that was not addressed in detail in the discussion paper, but that many respondents advised the board to think about nevertheless. So they highlighted that the disclosure problem is quite different when financial statements are consumed electronically as opposed to being read like a book. Many respondents thought the board should consider the digital reporting environment as part of the project, and they also noted that some of the discussions in the paper, such as those on formatting or location, become less relevant within that context. The final overview message we want to bring out is on slides 10 and 11, which talk about... So a clear message coming through the feedback is that many respondents feel that standards level activity would be the most effective thing the board could do to help address the disclosure problem. That said, however, we did get mixed feedback in terms of the preferred approach to and the potential objectives of a standards level review. So, for example, some think the board should view that as an immediate priority with an objective of removing requirements that some perceive to be overly prescriptive or excessive. Others think that the board should first develop a set of principles to then apply in a standards level review to individual standards with a view to achieving a consistent approach to disclosure requirements across the literature. So, for example, that might be a consistent balance between objectives and prescriptive requirements. And those are just a couple of examples, so you can see on slide 11 the different things that different respondents suggested. So that is a brief summary of the overview messages that we wanted to share with you today. We'll stop there for any comments or questions on that part of the feedback before moving on to the rest of the slide pack.
Sure.
Firstly, thanks for the overview. It's helpful to get an idea of themes coming through. On the standards level review, I was interested in a few of the specific examples, and I know that they're only examples and it's incomplete, your disclaimer applies, about what people were hoping that we were going to do. But it struck me that some of the things they want, like removing prescriptive language and linking to materiality, we've already tried to achieve indirectly. Certainly we could tidy it up by actually going and striking it through, as opposed to saying an IS1. By the way, materiality always applies, and even if we said thou shalt, it doesn't mean you have to do that. But it worries me a bit that people think that that's going to be some sort of panacea, given that we already think that's in place. I wonder whether you can tell from the letters over and above the bullet points what people really think the standard levels review is going to achieve, because I'm a little bit concerned that it's code for removing disclosure requirements, which isn't necessarily, I think, what our objective per se was. We want to improve effectiveness. So I'm a bit worried about a gap in expectations. Also, I'm very worried about this, and this is me, say it all the time, so at least I'm boringly consistent, I hope. The sort of desire for us to sort of suddenly move to objective-based disclosures before we get to see how well that's actually worked in some of these new standards continues to make me nervous, and I just worry that it's sort of combined with this desire to have to disclose less, and that that's a dangerous combination for us. But is your sense that they're really looking for less disclosure?
Yes, certainly from the prepare group, I would say that that's the case. I think we are in something of a slightly challenged time frame, because since we published this in March, we have, of course, done various activities on materiality, and the outcomes of those other activities are not yet evident to us. So I think, you know, it's clear from the feedback that those themes that you raised are quite strong across all of the comment letters that we got. But when we come to sort of steps, one of the factors will certainly be any impact of the things we've done in the intervening time. So that will, you know, this is a reflection of the feedback, but we will have to consider.
It's going to be quite tricky, isn't it? Because yes, we're not really going to see the effect of some of the very new stuff in particular, and even the IS1 changes, I think we're only probably only starting to see them, if at all. So it's
difficult. Gary? Thank you. Also on slide 11, and you know, Catherine, you've been with me at least some of these meetings. We speak to groups all the time on this. And I think, Sue, you had mentioned, remove prescriptive language. We've already done that. And the fact that it keeps coming back tells me the IS1 change a couple years ago did not gone through. And what I've said, and I said as recently as yesterday with Nelly in an outreach call, is that between the materiality practice statement that has one changes and the presumed, soon to be, you know, clarified definition of materiality, everything you need to do to take information out has been done. Now, granted, you have to determine it's immaterial, and it's certainly easier to do that if you remove it from the standard. But the same thing, I think, I also remind people that we're going to the disclosure checklists, if you will, that are in the back of our standards, that's a subset of a much longer list of wishes. And be careful what you ask for, because that wish lists have not gone away. And given the passage of time, legal changes, new contract and structuring forms and so on, probably added to it. So you be careful what you ask for. But I think what this all tells me, we probably need a little bit more targeted education or a webcast. This message, we are 3 years after these changes in IS1 went out. If these are still coming back, the message has not sunk through. And Grant, I first to agree, it's sometimes easier just to do it than to demonstrate it's immaterial. But we've, short of taking it out, we've already done that for the world. And by the way, you can't take something material out, because other parts of our standards and what Nate say, it has to be there, but some material, even if not even oriented. So I think we do need some education webcast. I think the board's not out in it, and I think we need to recognize it's not out there. It might be years of effort to get to individual standards level review, but we can't prohibit immaterial disclosures, we say that. But we've done probably everything we can to is to discourage them and to provide enablers to demonstrate it's a material. But the word's not out. We need to work it.
And John?
Yes. Catherine, just two questions. One is relevant to slide 6. And it says that the board should focus on areas that will make the most difference to the disclosure problem and analyze them in nowadays. I'm wondering whether the commentators specially raised or addressed what kind of area we need to focus, most focus on. So if you, whether you have any details of areas, yeah, it will be helpful. And the second question is slide 9, digital reporting and technology, and certain discussion are less relevant in digital reporting environment, especially in the location and formatting, because we are discussing location and formatting with regard to the project of primary financial statement. So there's some connection as said that. So whether any comments, specific comments on our primary financial reporting with regards new technology environment or something, yeah. So is it possible, you know, you can expand further, yeah?
Yes, of course. I could give you quite a long answer to both of those, so I'll try and be concise and then make sure we cover both of those themes in full detail in the full comment letter summary. So the first point about focusing on areas that would make the most difference. To expand on that slightly, throughout the feedback, there were many areas of the DP where some respondents indicated that they thought perhaps there were more effective things to do. So if I start with the, what perhaps they didn't like before moving on to what they suggested, there were some cases where people felt that the proposals in the paper would give rise to things that would be so high level, they questioned what the practical consequence of that would be for the disclosure problem. So things like principles of effective communication, for example, or sort of overarching principles rather than being sort of specific at standards level. Some said it would be more effective if you did objectives at standards level and more specifically, so could you focus on that instead? And like I said, these are just examples. The other element where this came out was there were parts of the discussion paper where people said, well, we can't necessarily form a strong view because the proposals aren't developed enough to allow us to do so. So examples of that would be the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board approach and the Type B approach, basing disclosures on activities. But in spite of that view, there were a subset of those giving it that said, we still don't think you should necessarily develop these further because, again, we think that time would be better spent focusing on something more standards level and specific because we think that would make the biggest difference. So in terms of what people wanted, the most common suggestion was standards level related, whether it be objectives or a standards level review of requirements. But like I said, that was a theme coming across many areas. So I think, I will give you a more complete answer in the paper that you'll get in February because it was broad across the DP rather than one particular suggestion. Your other question, which was about technology and digital reporting. In terms of the feedback we had about location and formatting guidance, to give an extreme example of the point being made, it was, the most extreme cases were if we move to a world where investors will just go and do a find and search on an electronic document or even have almost live information where they just pull down what they want, the location of various things within a book of disclosures becomes irrelevant because they won't read it like that. Given the question that you asked, it's probably also relevant that there were some that made the point that whilst digital reporting becomes increasingly important and advised us to consider it, meant there is still a place for an annual report, and therefore it's not that these considerations are not relevant anywhere, it's just that to not think about digital reporting they felt was a gap.
I must say I have sympathy for the commentators that would like us to get to a standard level review rather sooner than later. The reasons are multiple. I think we have to date done everything we could to help improve disclosures with the standards remaining what they are. And if we want to get to a further stage of improvement, we indeed need to do something to our standards. It's not going to happen naturally. And my observation would be that when you have list of disclosure requirements with or without very high level objectives, basically you're left with having a materiality filter as the only thing that can help you get to relevant reporting. So in my view, it would be necessary to couple the definition of specific objectives and so that those specific objectives would provide a relevance filter. And that relevance filter today does not really exist. So this is, in my view, why you have users who can claim that they don't have all relevant information that they need, because basically preparers will stop with the list of requirements, and preparers that claim that they provide unnecessary information because either the materiality filter was not well implemented or that cannot work beyond what it can do. So moving to more precise, specific, well-identified objectives that are close to specific needs of users doesn't mean that you move. You take away all the detail. In fact, the detail is there as possible guidance to meeting the objective. So it's a way of, first of all, guiding the preparer in making the appropriate selection, and also helping auditors and regulators to challenge whether they have made the appropriate judgment. But in my view, we need this supplementary relevance filter that doesn't exist today. And that can, in my view, only be done by indeed starting standard level reviews.
Martin.
A little bit the same as Francois has said, because if we don't have in some standards an objective for the disclosure, I think it is very difficult to make materiality judgments because if there is a standard, you should disclose the size of the shoes of the CEO, I think, but not giving the objective why you should disclose the size of the shoes of the CEO, you can make very hard and kind of materiality judgment. So is it up for 36 and below, or is it 37 and below? But it is a joke, but I think it is. Without really an objective, I think it would be very, very difficult to make materiality. And if you think we can solve this, if there is disclosure overload with materiality judgment, I think we maybe can do it for some kind of our newer standards, but for the old ones not. And therefore, I can understand why many come back to us and saying, okay, it's all good, but if you don't do all that and kind of more objective based in the standard setting, then it is useless. And I think that is true for some of our standards, for others not. And that is my conclusion on this feedback, because I have said it also from the beginning. I think it was also our plan to test in one of the older standards where we have the prescriptive case-by-case things, that we should try to give it more objective base and then see, okay, does it work or does it not? So that is for me not surprising, because I think also we have to do something. Not for all our standards, but for some, I think we can do some improvements.
Mary?
A couple of different reactions, and I'm going to try and put them in terms of things to think about for summary of feedback. I had a bit of a different reaction to Gary's about what we're hearing about how effective the changes are that we've made in the past, the IS1 changes, which is, I think we sometimes underestimate the period of time it takes for something to become effective, to be reflected in financial statements, for people have to consume the information in the financial statements and process that something has changed and have that inform their view. And so I think rather than jumping to doing more standard setting to respond to that specific point, I tend to think about, are there other ways that we can leverage the standard setting that we have already done? Maybe it's education, maybe it's pointing, I don't know, but thinking about that. So I might come to some of the same responses to it, but I would dig hard in terms of looking at the feedback, in terms of thinking about what am I looking for in a feedback statement, to see if there's any evidence about whether they think that the amendments we made are ineffective, or whether it's not clear that they are thinking about post-effective date financial statements of those changes, and whether they're suggesting further changes or whether they're suggesting education or other things to reinforce those change. That was one. Second is a generic response about standards level review, which is, I think we can, if we look at it from a change management perspective, we can get wound up and excited about making things that we think will be real improvements and help people. But I think we may forget about the consequence of having standards in perpetual motion, in terms of change. And so that leads me to say, in your responses, is it just a general call to move to standards level review, or are people highlighting particular standards that they think are priorities or particularly challenging? And one thing I might ask you to think about, and I guess it's a follow-on to the feedback, is especially if they identify priorities and we're getting any commonality of that, to map that against standards that we might already be changing for other reasons, and look to bring those two together. Because I think it's hard in the world when you say, well, that's IS 16 2014, and you have to go, was the 2014 change a big one or a little one? Was it a recognition change, or was it a disclosure change? Is it just a consequential amendment from something else? So the more we can package that, I think the better, as we look at moving to standards level. But I think we also probably have to think about what can we abstract from these responses about how we should be approaching standards level reviews. And that kind of comes back to what's on slide 8. I'm not sure if it was your suggestion, the suggestion from the letters, that we think about guidance to assist the board in setting standards, including how we write disclosure requirements, as being conceptual framework material. Was that your thought for where we could put it, or was it the feedback that we were getting? And because I tend to think that some of the stuff we want to do in standards level is more operational and do this, don't do this, kind of think about that. That almost is a drafting guide rather than conceptual principles. And I take that in part from some of the high-level feedback you had on slide 6, which is this is too abstract and high-level and not specific enough. So think about the consistency of those messages. I'm not against, if we think there is material that belongs in a conceptual framework, but I think a lot of the stuff that people are talking about in the standards-level review may be very operational, drafting, I'll call them hints, I think it's probably more than that, and it comes back to some of the points that Martin was making about start with an objective, how we approach these things, but rather than then trying to roll it out so we have a new version of every standard that has to work its way through the endorsement process in some countries, translations in others, let's look to see how we could work it through in kind of a packaged way. And so I think those generally if when you're doing the feedback, see if you see any patterns or hot spots. This seems to be particularly a priority, whether it's disclosure requirements for standards level review or within a generic do more of this, particularly for X, whether that's a standard or an issue.
Thank you. Just to clarify one point in case it's not evident from the slides, everything on these slides is from the letters, so it's all what the respondent said rather than our.
And just the EG conceptual framework was that overwhelming that everybody thinks we need to supplement our conceptual framework with a new disclosure chapter, or is it just some people? And you don't need to answer it now, but just...
It's worth clarifying, because potentially there's a misunderstanding there. The point that was being made by quite a number of respondents was that they did not understand whether the discussion paper was trying to suggest sort of overarching principles that would be for the board to use to set future disclosure requirements, or whether Well, I mean, both of those opinions came out. Those that expressed an opinion went both ways, but it was coming from a point of not understanding what we were aiming for, rather than anything else.
I just wanted to respond quickly to the comments that Françoise and Martin made about objective-based disclosures, and at the risk of feeling sounding like a witch, I wish I shared your optimism, because the thing that worries me is that I think if we go down a path of being more objective-based, and I think what really people want is less prescriptive, and it's a disaster, I think it'll be very hard for us to row back. So that's why I'm quite cautious. And the reason why I'm cautious is because we don't have live standards that are particularly objective based in the disclosures, but we do have some areas where we're a lot less prescriptive. And one of them is in IAS1, where we talk about sort of a very minimum number of line items, and then we say, and thou shalt provide extra information where it's relevant. And we know that just about nothing extra gets provided, even though there must be other relevant stuff based on the analysis that the staff did last year. Also, when we were looking at the information on cash restrictions within groups, when we were looking at IAS7 and we went to look at the disclosure that's already required, we found a vacuum. It's just nothing is provided by people. They just don't do it. And so until, I'd love to see some evidence that with the new standards where we really have tried to be more objective-based, like in IFRS 9, which I always use as my example, that if we get some good application, that would give me heart. But everything I hear out there is a massive concern from people that actually that's not what's unfolding out there, that people are looking at it, and it's, if it doesn't say you have to do it, so I'm just cautious. Gary?
Although I actually agree we should try to have objectives-based disclosures, I actually agree with you that it probably isn't likely to work. First of all, when you think of take leasing as a recent standard, I mean, and I've used this before, what's your objective? To understand changes in the accounts over the prior years and to predict future cash flows. That's going to be kind of boilerplate. So you really got to start taking it down to a working level of reasonably detailed objectives. The other thing is, a preparer, and I made this comment in earlier lives, is, you know, you spend, what we spend using leasing is about 10 years, 100,000 staff hours. We presumably have a pretty good feeling about what's important to understand in leasing at that point in time when we issue it, vastly greater than the preparer audience who happen to live with the standard. So I think that institutional knowledge we've got, to the extent we think it's generally material and generally relevant, I think should be in the standards. I mean, I think it should be written less prescriptively, and certainly allow that if it's immaterial, you should ignore it. Now maybe that's the two tiers of the common package and other stuff to consider. We can get into that, but I think, so in general, I think high-level objectives things I just don't think is going to work very well. And then we're back to some comment letters I've received in earlier walks of life, is nothing in the brain's problematic, but one comment I got back was, all these disclosures, well, if they're voluntary, they must be material, because you wouldn't put something voluntarily in there that's immaterial. And you get into this vicious do loop. Well, if I don't have to do it, but I do it, there must be central to my message on something. And so as preparers, you tend not to disclose anything more than is enumerated. So I'm not really a huge fan of objectives based disclosures, even though I agree the high-level principle, I just don't think they're very workable.
Anne?
Further to Sue's point about the objectives and the specific requirements, we did have a paper on this at the IFRS Research Forum in Brussels 2 weeks ago, where the researchers tried to look at standards we have that have both objectives and specifics. And they looked at all the literature that had been done by academics, and there was no evidence to help us regarding objectives. Because of the objectives being high level, people couldn't see by doing research whether the objectives were being followed or not. They can only track the extent to which there's compliance with specific disclosure requirements. So that's it doesn't help us because we don't get that feedback on the style of standard that we're looking for as part of this project.
So moving on then to the rest of the slide pack, which runs through each chapter of the discussion paper and summarises the key messages coming out. Again, it's probably worth splitting the discussion a bit, so I'll very briefly summarise slides 13 to 16 and then pause for comments. So slides 13 and 14 are on the disclosure problem, which is the first chapter. Worth mentioning specifically is slide 14, which expands on the chapter slightly with specific reference to the idea of developing those high-level disclosure principles in a general standard and the fact that some were in favour of this but saw it as a first step towards standards-level review. Others were less supportive, thinking that it might be a bit too high-level, as we've already mentioned. Slide 15 is on the principles of effective communication. In terms of content, a lot of the respondents generally agreed with them, with some describing them as largely common sense. However, in terms of whether developing those would be an effective solution to the problem, we did get some mixed views, and we did have some particular concerns about practical application and enforceability. So, for example, some questioned whether an individual company can really be responsible for achieving comparability with other companies, and many questioned whether it was realistic to enforce both comparability and entity-specific principles. One of the messages that came through strongly on that chapter was about the possibility of developing guidance on formatting, where generally respondents did not support that and considered that board time might perhaps be better spent in other places. Slide 16 talks about the chapter on the roles of the primary financial statements and the notes. For the most part, I think all of us on the team that have read all the letters in detail felt that this was an area that didn't really generate quite such a strong opinion as the rest of the DP. But the one area where we did have a clear message coming through was about the inconsistent use of present and disclose, where most did feel that it would be helpful if we did something about that. But again, there were mixed views as to what that something ought to be. So I will pause in case there's any comments on those slides. Everyone's exhausted. So moving on to the last section, slides 17 and 18 address the chapters on location of information. So with regard to both IFRS information outside the financial statements and non-IFRS information inside the financial statements, the general message coming through here was that most stakeholder groups consider that those are useful communication options in some circumstances, but the feedback did highlight quite a number of concerns that respondents thought the board would need to address if we are going to go down that route, and you can see those listed on the slide. I'll skip over slide 19 because the feedback on performance measures was included in one of the papers to the earlier session today. Slide 20 covers the chapter on disclosure of accounting policies, where there was general support for the idea of developing requirements around which accounting policies to disclose, although the responses would generally prefer something that is principles-based rather than any form of prescriptive guidance, such as the categorisation that was in the DP. There was less support for guidance on location of accounting policies, with many respondents indicating that they would prefer companies to have flexibility there. So slide 21 talks about centralised disclosure objectives. As we've already mentioned, this is an area where we received really quite mixed views, both in terms of whether developing centralised objectives would be effective in addressing the disclosure problem and in terms of the best approach to take in developing any such objectives. Now, one element of this chapter that did generate fairly consistent opinion was the idea of a single disclosure standard, where the general message coming through here was that people felt that's not necessary and that board time would again perhaps be better spent somewhere else. Finally, slide 22 talks about the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board approach to disclosure. So this is a good example of an area where respondents felt that the practical outcomes of the discussions in the paper were difficult to completely understand. So many commented that they could see the theoretical merit of the two-tier approach and the focus on objectives, but there were some concerns expressed about whether the potential practical outcomes of that approach would justify the time and cost that would be involved to develop it in depth. So again, mixed views there. So that is our chapter by chapter summary. So if there's any questions or comments on that section, we'll be happy to take them.
Well, I think if one thing is clear as we progress with this project is we need a bit more focus than what the discussion paper contains. I think when you look back at all the elements, it was a rather uneven document. Big ideas with small ideas. We need to bring a little bit more practical value to the proposals.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair reflection of the feedback.
Okay, thank you very much.